You're listening to Bigfoot Live, starring Thomas Gardy, the world's most respected authority on the phenomena known as Bigfoot. Sit back and relax as we take you on a journey into the world of the unknown. Believer or skeptic, man or woman, you will be mesmerized by real people telling real descriptions about real encounters. Fasten your seatbelts, America. It's reality radio at its finest, and it starts now.
In 1967, my whole life changed. I saw the Roger Patterson film on the Johnny Carson show. And I gotta tell you, that's the day I thought I was gonna challenge the world and go out and find this thing.
We had found like 12 tracks in the ground. I didn't want to believe it was Bigfoot.
Oh, yeah. Did you hear that?
He's moving right now. He's moving right now. He's straight out of the tree line. He's moving to the right. See him? He's going to the right. He's going into the trees right now. Come here, look.
I'm Bob Hallmark, and I'm a reporter with ABC Television and Tyler Lundgren. It's been my pleasure to be with Tom Scotty and his team tonight, and I have to admit that I was skeptical when I came out here. I thought we, at this time in our history, had the technology to be able to find one of these things if it existed. But after seeing the footprints and the dig marks in the sand and what I believe to be a very large creature running at a high rate of speed through the woods, I convinced them I had to change my opinion on Bigfoot. I turned, I saw this thing standing by my gator.
When I saw the actual footprints, I realized they were something special and probably Sasquatch.
When I landed on the ground, I was kind of thinking, this ain't no human being. There's got to be something else.
www.searchingforbigfoot.com.
Out in the swamps, what you think I've seen? Something strange, you know. Sasquatch sitting on his thigh, knee, and he was talking to Moxie Joe. Well, part of it gon' hell. Out in the St. John's walls. Sasquatch doing a brand new dance, and he called it the Bigfoot Stomp.
Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Marco Bill on the Bigfoot Live broadcast. And folks, it's that time of the week again. It's time for the Wednesday evening Bigfoot Live radio show with our host, Mr. Tom Descarty. And now, everybody, the man who put the big back into Bigfoot, our host and renowned Bigfoot researcher, Mr. Tom Biscardi. Good evening, Tom. How are you tonight?
Well, hello, everybody. This is Marco Bill. I'm sorry to say Tom was scheduled to come on tonight, and he was going to be on, but he earlier today he ate something, and he got food poisoning, and he's really doing it pretty bad right now. He's laying down, went to the doctor and everything, got some medicine. But he'll be on next week again. I just want to do kind of a recap. I want to, first of all, thank all of our listeners for all the emails and for the calls every once in a while, too. I get some calls from some of you folks and saying how things are going, giving me status on what's going on in your areas and things like that, or giving me references to other people. I appreciate that. We really do. I'd like to thank all of you and wish you and your families a very Merry Christmas coming up. And also, last week, we had a caller call in, and she went to, her name was Lou, and she had a little surprise, and she called me prior to the show, and I asked her if she could come on the show, and she said yes. And while we were talking, she said that she was a Bigfoot enthusiast, and they went to a yard sale or a garage sale. And while they were at the garage sale, she found some some articles from Ivan Marks. Now, Ivan Marks, if a lot of you don't know, Ivan Marks goes way back, a long time ago, back in towards when the Patterson-Gimlin time frame was. Ivan was a tracker, and he tracked animals. I mean, he was an official tracker. Very few people can do that. And his whole life, that's what he did. And he worked for National Geographic. He worked for Life. I mean, all different kinds of people, magazines and other things where he captured bears, lions, all different kinds of animals all over the United States and Canada and in Alaska. And they'd also, him and his wife, had cameras that they took with them all the time, and they took pictures of wildlife. And they'd sell these pictures to Life magazine and things like this. But anyway, Ivan got the Bigfoot bug when he had actually seen one and found tracks of it, and they found a bear that had been killed by one. And so he spent his life, the rest of his life after that, trying to track and find out about this creature. And and of course, now if you go on the internet and you go scooping around on Googles and everything else, and they'll say Ivan Marks the hoaxer and Ivan Marks was this and that. Friends, I got to tell you something. I don't believe anything that I see on the internet anymore, ever. There's many things, stories out there on Tom. The more recent one was that he was getting together with some with a lady for DNA and all this stuff, the person that's got our DNA, and we're making all kinds of deals. He's never talked to her, ever, not anymore. And I don't know how these rumors come about, but they do, and they grow into these gigantic stories, and people believe these things, and they stretch them out and pass them around, and it's so sickening sometimes to find out that all this is just nothing but gossip, and that other people don't have any more time on their hands than to pass other stories around. If any time anybody out there wants to know anything, all you got to do is give us a call. Give us a call, and we'll tell you the truth. We'll tell you whatever it is you want to know. I mean, we really do. We research Bigfoot. That's our whole goal. We don't pay attention to what everybody else talks about us about, because we just don't have time to screw around with it anymore. What we do is we research Bigfoot, and we're trying to reach the ultimate goal, and that's to identify the creature. And this show is, of course, dedicated with people that have had encounters with this creature. And we want to, the reason for this whole show for the last 6-7 years here is to let mainstream America know that this creature really does exist. He's out there. He's real. And real people have real encounters with these things all the time. Now, two of our guests tonight are new guests, and they're people that called in on the Bigfoot Hotline. Now, as I told you many times before, I get a lot of calls on the Bigfoot Hotline every week. There's no pressure on anybody not to come on the show, because we understand how people feel when they have an encounter experience. First of all, if you tell anybody, the first damn thing they say is you're crazy and you don't know what you're doing and all kinds of stuff. And friends and family are the worst people about it. I mean, they won't believe you. And all you want to do is have somebody believe you that you did see this creature, you did see something, you're not stupid, you know what you saw. No, it wasn't a cloud. No, it wasn't some a bear or whatever. So, we understand all this stuff. We've went through it ourselves, and so what we want to do is make sure that everybody feels comfortable. And if you don't feel comfortable coming on our show and talking about your story, that's quite all right. What we want to do is keep in contact with you and maintain a contact with you. And some people go off. We've got a couple people on here tonight that ended up calling in on the hotline, and by golly, they're researching out there on their own right now. And that's what a lot of people do, and they keep in contact with us. And every couple of weeks or so, we'll have them on the show to see what they've been doing. So that's what we do. And that's what our whole purpose is, in doing this show and also in our research for Bigfoot, is to exploit the creature to somehow let it be known that this creature does exist to science, whether they like it or not. And that's what our whole purpose is. So we don't have time to go around and gossip on other people's stuff or even answer questions about it. It's really nonsensical. It's really not worth our time to try to defend ourselves. You folks, most everybody out there, you do one of two things. You either believe or you don't believe. And it's okay if you don't believe in Bigfoot. We didn't either when we started. So we understand how a lot of people feel. So don't worry about it. Anyway, here we go. We're going to start out tonight with our first guest, and Mike from Illinois. And Mike called me last night about 2:00 in the morning his time. And Mike, how are you tonight, my friend?
I'm doing all right. I'm doing it.
Good, good. Well, Mike, why don't you tell us basically just kind of what took place last night? What happened last night when you?
It was about 1:30, between 1 and 1:30 in the morning. You know, we're just camping out by the lake like we always do. You know, we go out there, we go hunting, all that. And you know, I get out of my tent to go take a piss, and about a little bit away from me, in the trees. I can barely see him, but I see him because I seen a big shadow, and I could see from mid-thigh down, it was a big, hairy person, and it looked like Bigfoot. I ain't never seen one before, ever really heard about it.
Okay. And, of course, what did you do? Mike, are you still there? Did I lose you? I think Mike dropped off there, folks. Probably he's on a cell phone. I think maybe like I said, we got a storm here, but I'm not sure. Maybe he, let me go ahead and tell you. Mike gave me a call about 2:00 in the morning, about 1:20 is when he had the sighting. And he gave me a call about, 2:00 in the morning. And he went through, basically what he told you here. And of course, when you see something that big like that, and also it kind of growled and made some noises and stuff, and then it took off into the woods. And when that happens, of course, you really, this is kind of a scary experience. And, of course, he called me, and he was a little bit excited. You can't blame him. And he wanted to know what to do. And that's a good question, too. I mean, what do you do? Because you've never seen something like this before, and all of a sudden you just saw it. And now you're thinking, am I safe? And they're out camping and in a tent. And it's about 29, 30 degrees out there, I guess, right now. It's not, real, real cold, but it's cold. And so, what do you do? And those are the questions that we were talking about last night for about an hour. You wonder, should I protect myself? Should I do something to it? Is it going to come around? Is it going to harm me? All these kinds of questions are questions that people ask when they have an encounter like this. And they're all good questions. And what I tell people is this. First of all, these creatures are very big. They're about 8 foot tall, 7 foot tall, and they weigh, 400, 500 pounds, something like that? Pretty big. And they're pretty strong. You can tell that by some of the evidence that they leave behind. First of all, their footprints. Many, many people have told me that, on the same ground that they're standing on, the footprint is about a half an inch or an inch deep. Their foot doesn't even hardly make an impression. So that tells you something. That tells you that thing weighs quite a bit. And a couple other things. Is the creature by itself? normally these creatures hang around in pods, family pods. And no, they usually don't hang around by themselves. And they have sentries. They're curious. They like to look and see things and come up just like we watch TV. We're their television, I would say. And so all these kinds of questions are what Mike had to tell me. And we went through the whole thing. And of course, you know, he asked, well, he had a gun there. He wondered, you know, should I shoot it? And I said, no. If you harm that thing, it's going to try to hurt you or try to attack you. Or if that one doesn't, another one will. It may. And I said, they're very intelligent creatures, and you got to be careful. And you just don't want to, you know, do anything aggressive that's going to make them want to harm you. So those are the kinds of things that we talked about. Those are the kinds of things that go through people's heads when they have an encounter. And, of course, the other thing is that you're kind of excited and you're kind of scared as well. And I'm sorry that Mike's phone dropped off here. It would have been nice to have him complete it because he had some good stuff that he wanted to say. And, of course, he was a non-believer before that, but now he's a firm believer. And he's going to keep in contact with us. But that's what Mike was going to tell us or the rest of the way there before he dropped off the air. What we'll do is I think we're going to go next, and I'm going to do a commercial. We'll be right back, and we're going to talk with Don from North Carolina. Okay, and here we go with a commercial.
In August 2008, there was an announcement that was heard around the globe. A promise of the end to an age-long mystery and deception that played out on the world stage. Anatomy of a Bigfoot Hoax. Now, for the first time ever, see with your own eyes and hear the true behind-the-scenes story of the hoax that gripped the world. Featuring original, never-before-seen footage. Available now at searchingforbigfoot.com.
One, they're very sick people, but you know what bothers me more than anything, Megan? These guys were the law.
And we're back. Well, now we're going to go out to Don from North Carolina. Don, how are you tonight, my friend?
I'm just fine.
Well, did you hear what Mike had to say?
Yes, and he dropped off, so we couldn't hear everything.
No, I understand. Well, I tried to explain the whole story, but it's kind of an exciting thing. Don, well, you had your wife had an exciting experience as well,
and she's on the line right now.
Yeah,
her name is Mildred.
Okay, Mildred. Well, why don't you tell us what happened and when it happened and how this all came about?
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing fine, Mildred. How are you today?
I'm doing great. My story is kind of a little different.
Sure.
This happened about 11, 12 years ago, before anybody was thinking about Bigfoot around here anyway. First off, let me tell you, our house is deep in the woods, and the trees came right up to our yard. And it was late in the evening. I was sitting on the front porch. It was just before sundown or sunset, and out of the trees to my right side came a creature. I don't know what it was. It was not a big, like 7 foot tall Bigfoot.
Mm-hmm.
It was about maybe three and a half feet tall.
Right, small one.
Yeah. It was covered in long, dark hair. And when it came out of the woods, into the yard, right back into the woods. At first, my first thought was somebody's lost a monkey somewhere. But there was no long tail.
Right.
I mean, there was no tail to it.
Yeah, no tail at all.
It was walking on 2 feet. and the arms were above the head rather than hanging down by the side. The arms were above the head.
Mm-hmm.
And it scared me to death. So I screamed for Don. And, of course, by the time he got outside from in the house, the creature was gone.
Oh,
and
my gosh.
To this day, we have no clue what it was. Mm-hmm. We didn't talk about it to anybody because, like I said, we live in the country,
sure.
In the woods. And Don had told people about seeing coyotes, and they laughed at him. The coyotes eat chickens now. You
well,
know,
yeah, and that's the first thing that happens when you say that. So it's a normal circumstance that happens, but it's no fun going through that.
No, and, you know, to this day, I wonder, could it have been a baby, Bigfoot?
Of course, it could have been, yeah. Mildred, were you able to see any features of the face or anything like that?
No.
Just basically the body and the
and
outline and the arms and legs and stuff, right?
And it had long hair.
Yeah, long hair, yeah.
And, I mean, it was out of the woods and right back into the woods just in seconds.
Okay, now, after that happened, this is about 12 years ago, right?
Yes.
Now, more recently, Don was going to go, and was he going to buy a motorcycle or something?
Well,
a gun. That's what it was.
Oh, I'm sorry. God, I got my story mixed up. Don, go ahead, tell us.
Okay, he was going.
I own my own business.
Sure.
And the economy right now has just kicked me in the you-know-what, okay?
Yeah, everybody, we're all like that, Don, I'll tell you.
And I sold one of my guns.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a Weatherby 300 mag.
Mm-hmm.
And about a month ago, I said, I'll try to find one online. And I did. And it was on armslist.com. And coming to find out, he only lived about 15 miles away. And so I emailed him. He emailed me, and then he emailed me back, and then he called me. And I went to his house. I paid for the gun, and we started talking back and forth about hunting and this and that. And then, you know, one thing led to another, and then it came around to Bigfoot. And so I gave him some sites to go to, and then he told me his story. And his name is Kenneth Williamson. I have never met this man in my entire life, and I hope he's online right now. But he told me his wife saw one about 2 weeks after they moved into their new home. And she came screaming in the house, and he was asleep, and he went outside, and he didn't see nothing. But she said it was standing at the end of the house with its arms down at its knees, and it was hairy. Now, how in the world can two people have not known each other in their entire life have the same story? And
that's
my
right.
Jaws just hit the ground.
Absolutely. Now, Don, remember when we were talking the other day, me and you?
Yes.
Remember now, I've interviewed somewhere near about 800 people in the last, 6-7 years. And every single one, none of these people know each other. No one. Okay? And when you go through a description and an encounter experience, the likenesses, all of the things, I mean, it's just like deja vu. It's just like everybody's there at the same time and saw the same creature. You know what I'm talking about? And
yes, and I'm a deer hunter, and I have never seen one.
I know. Isn't it amazing? And of course, people don't want to talk about these things because if you do...
No, because you're ridiculed.
That's right. And people make fun of you, even your friends and family. And friends and family are the worst. I mean, you know,
Even my father, I tried to start a conversation with him, and he just shut me off.
I know. It's amazing.
Kenneth, are you there?
No, he's not here. He didn't dial in.
No.
That's but, okay, though. Don't worry, Don. It's all right.
That just blew me away because I had not said nothing until he told me his story, and then I told him mine. And I went, damn. You know, here we are 15 miles away, and his wife has seen something, and my wife has seen the same thing.
Right. It's amazing, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Now, as I told you before, Don, you guys are, whether you actively pursue this creature or not, it's okay. But you're in identity with it now, and you basically have a belief system in it. And
well, I do because I have seen the videos online, and
sure.
You can tell the ones that are BS and the ones that are not.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, pretty much. And one of the things that happens is we'd like to maintain contact with you folks, if you don't mind. And if anything does come up again, of course, always give us a call. You, as you know, you can call me anytime. When you called the last time, when you called on the weekend there, my battery in my phone was dead, and the phone was in my pocket.
You need
so it wasn't
to charge
ringing.
The battery.
Yeah. And I didn't know it until later. And then I think you did. You talked to Tom, right?
Yes.
Yeah, you talked to Tom. Tom called you back there. And when I tried to call you back, I guess you were on the phone with Tom.
Yes.
So, but that's okay. But one of us answers the phone.
This is something that has just taken my life over ever since September in that Utah video.
Yep.
That is, you know, I mean, here it is, standing up, not using its arms to stand up. It just stands up.
Right.
And there's that long arm.
Yep, and apes and chimps, they don't stand up. What they do is what we call knuckle walk.
Yeah.
They knuckle walk. And they still walk on four with their knuckles. And you know, although they climb trees and stuff like that, but these creatures stand up erect and walk like a human, and it's pretty amazing. And there's several different species of these things as well, and some of them are more human-like, and some of them are more ape-like, depending upon where you're, you know, where they're at, and so it's amazing. There's just too much mystery. We there's a lot more we got to find out about these things, but what I'd like to do is welcome you to our Bigfoot family.
Well,
and,
yes,
you
but
and your wife.
If I could give everyone out there my Gmail address, and if anybody wants to contact me, I'm at abetterfutureplanb@gmail.com. Email me.
Okay. Well,
tell me what you've seen, because I want to see one myself, because I have spent hundreds and hundreds of hours in the woods in Virginia, and I haven't seen one yet. And here's my wife. She's on the front porch, and God knows there's one right there.
I understand. There's a lot of people. You know, there's a couple of researchers from way back up in Canada. One guy, he spent his whole life looking for the creature. He never did see it. And he died without seeing it. And then, of course, all these other people come up, and they've seen it three or four times and all this. And, it would just drive him nuts.
Well, can I say one thing before we get offline?
Absolutely, Mildred. Yeah.
Okay. We have a dog. We've had Molly is our dog for 11 years. She's a wonderful watchdog. She barks when somebody when something's around. Like I said, we live in the woods. She doesn't bark at deer or raccoons or possums or anything like that. But if somebody is around that she's not familiar with, she barks.
Mm-hmm.
Just to let us know somebody's coming. And sometimes I'll be in the house with her, and she will do this low growl. And she'll bark for a while, and then she'll do this low growl. And the more she does it, and the more that I'm learning, because believe me, I was not a Bigfoot fan. I've never had been.
No, I understand.
Recently. But the more I think about it, I wonder if she's seeing something that we haven't seen yet.
Well, animals, you wait till you're going to listen to a couple more people if you want to stay on the line here and listen to the rest of the show. There's a couple more people on here, and we got a guy, his name is Chris, and his dog, you ought to see what happened to his dogs. He's got trained hunting dogs, right?
Uh-huh.
They kind of cowered under the porch.
Wow.
And hid away. All kinds of stuff. So, I mean, and we've had a lot of that. I mean, a lot of people tell us that about dogs.
I want these creatures protected. You know,
absolutely.
They have nothing to do with us, so
nope.
Let's just leave them alone. Observe them, you know.
Well, you know what, Don? Here's the thing that happens. We've been involved now investigating several government cover-ups of this creature. We've also been involved with trying to get the scientific community involved in it. And you know what? They're not, and they won't. And until this creature is a known species, okay, and I got to tell you something. Some of our DNA, don't get this wrong. Don't take this the wrong way. But some of the DNA that we got back, it would say that it's the possibility that this thing is what they call angelic or ancient human, 15,000 years or more.
Yeah.
Okay? And so that's why we don't want to harm these things. But what's going to have to happen is we're going to have to, in some way, identify this thing and get it identified. And the only way to do that is, right now, is pictures and movies and things like that do nothing. I mean, we've had those for years. There's a lot of real ones out there for years. And they do nothing to the scientific community to stir them into any kind of an awakening that there is a species out there. And there's very few people that are out there that are in the scientific world that are even investigating or even interested in it.
They found
a chimp in the last few years here. They found a whole thing of chimpanzees that were thought extinct for thousands of years. And they found those. And, I mean, there's all kinds of things that we don't know.
Well, they're finding new things every day.
Sure.
But let me say one thing here.
Sure.
It is not a very well-known, and people don't know about it, but your listeners, if you're out there, look up Kennewick Man.
Mm-hmm.
Look up Salutrans. You don't hear about this.
Nope. Well, we've had some, even look in the Bible and some other places. I can even tell you to look at a famous painting, the famous painting of hell, and you'll see that the creature that's painted, this is 500 years ago, that's painted on there, looks exactly like a Bigfoot.
Wow.
So, I mean, this creature has been around for a long time. The Native Americans, there are many tribes.
Hundreds of years. They have known about them.
Absolutely, and in Europe. It's all over the world, Don. We've found that there are Russia. In fact, I want to send you some information that you can look at.
Please.
In fact, in Russia, back in the 1800s, there was a small village in Russia captured a female, and they call them they're wild, what they call wild men, and what they this one specifically they kept her in a cage. Well, no, she was alive. She lived for a long, long time in the village. They kept her caged up for about 4 or 5 years. She drank. They gave her booze. And vodka and stuff, and she'd get drunk. And then the village men would sleep with her, and she had three babies. The first baby died because she tried to soak it in ice water. And then the village people would take the babies away from her, and then they raised them. The children were natural, no kidding, human children. They had, you know, large features and everything, right? But she never was able to really talk or do anything, but the children did, and there's a whole thing on that. I'll give you a link to Alma, and I'll give you a link to that, and the story of it. And they're trying to find the grave right now today to to try to get some DNA from it. But of the last surviving child that died in 1950.
So much going on that people don't even know about.
Oh, right, yeah.
And honestly believe that the Indians of America, and they believe they were the first ones here, they were not here. They were Europeans. Look up Salutrans.
Yep, I
look up the Canoe Man.
Yeah.
And it is, you know, how is a skull on the Columbian River, and it was found, and come to find out it was 9,000 years old, and it had European features.
Yep.
There is so much going on.
Absolutely.
That people don't know about. And it is being
We have a skeleton, Don. We have a skeleton. It's 2,500 years old. And we've had DNA done on the jaw. It's an 8-foot skeleton. It's actually two of them in the burial site. So there's a lot of things. Yep. I'll give you some I'll send you some information. I'll send you some information. We have a lot of stuff. Tom has been working doing this like 40-some years now. And I've only been doing it for the last seven. But there's a lot of stuff to know. And you're right. There's a lot of stuff out there.
Well, I've only been doing it since September. And I am absolutely involved with it. Because there is a lot out there that is being hailed from the American people.
Yep.
Fluted spear points.
Yep.
They find more on the East Coast and little in the Midwest and on the West Coast. Most of them are on the East Coast.
Yep. Well, I got other guests on here, Don. I got to go on to the next guest. But I tell you what, when I'm done here tomorrow, probably sometime, I'm going to send you an email with some links. Also, anytime you want, you can give me a call, okay? When I send you the email, I'll give you my cell number. That way you can dial me direct.
Okay.
And anytime. And I'll go over a lot of stuff with you that I know and that I found and places that you can go take a look at stuff. Okay?
Sure will.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for both you and Mildred for coming on and telling your story. I appreciate it.
I want to thank you.
And you're part of the Bigfoot family. Welcome to our Bigfoot family, my friends.
Yes,
thank
sir.
You. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now. You can listen to the rest of the show if you'd like.
Okay, we will.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, it was Don and Mildred. Next, we're going to go to Rocky. Rocky, how are you?
I'm good. How about yourself?
I'm doing great.
Well, I'd like to tell Tom, get better.
Yeah, I know. Good gosh, I guess you got to be careful when you're eating those shrimp and fish and stuff. I don't know. He was pretty sick. But well, Rocky, what's going on? How you been doing?
I've been doing real good. me and Sweet just got back from southern Arkansas. Mm-hmm. As you know, Tom called me, I guess it was a couple of weeks ago or something like that, 3 weeks. He told me about a call that he got from an old boy down in southern Arkansas.
Right.
It said he'd seen had several sightings.
Yes.
Well, Tom called me and asked me if I'd be interested in going down there and checking it out, I called the guy.
Uh-huh.
I talked to him. I think he said it was around March and April that he had the sightings.
Right, yeah. I remember the guy.
Yeah, B.C. Anyhow, I called him and talked to him for a while. He seemed to be a really nice guy. He was, he was pretty excited.
Yes.
Well, about what he saw and the fact that somebody is calling to talk to him about it, but anyhow, he told me that him and his best friend been out in the woods one day. He said they spent a lot of time out there, and I work too, so any minute, few minutes I can spend out in the woods is good. But him and his partner, Tinker, had been out messing around the woods, and they're walking just a little ways up from a river, and BC said that he saw some movement, and he stopped and, you know, focused, and he said that it was, in fact, a critter about, he said, between 6.5 to 7 foot tall.
Mm-hmm.
It is black for the most part, but he said it was standing facing him.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that it was gray around the face and said it looked old. And, of course, I told him that, you know, having gray around your face don't make you old. It makes you a man. But, but anyhow, he said that he turned around to his buddy Tinker and said, yeah, hey, Tinker, do you see what I'm seeing? Well, I guess Tinker did because he froze up and acted like he couldn't speak. But BC turned back to where the creature was, and it was moving off at a pretty good pace. And BC wanted to go after it, but Tinker had other ideas.
Understand.
But he said the whole incident lasted less than a minute, but he gave me a pretty good description.
Sure.
And he said it was definitely a biped between 6.5, 7 feet tall, mostly black, a lot of gray. He estimated the weight about around in the 350-pound range.
Mm-hmm.
And he said after that, you know, after it moved on out, he lost sight of it, but it was sometime after that he saw, weeks after that, he saw they were in the same area. He saw another one that was a little bit squattier, kind of a red color. I mean, a reddish-brown color.
Yeah, reddish-brown color, yeah.
Yeah, but it was, he said he didn't get a good look at it. He saw it from behind.
Right.
And he said he took off running after it, which, well, I don't know how bright that was, but it's one of those things. Dogs chase cars, but they don't know what to do when they catch it.
Right. They try to bite the tire.
Right. Well, he had Tinker with him that day and found out real quick that Tinker wasn't chasing it with him. So I think he smartened up and decided to drop off the chase. Well, me and I talked to the Swede. After I talked to BC on the phone, I called the Swede. And anybody that don't know who the Swede is, he's my tonto. He's he's my number one sidekick.
Mm-hmm.
But anyhow, I called him and said, I told him what was going on, asked him what he thought, and he said that he was getting his stuff packed. He was ready to go, so we headed out. We got down to BC's about 11 o'clock Thursday morning and got him up out of bed. And he works nights. We went through it all over again so he could fill the suite in and all that. So after we got everything, got all that taken care of, oddly enough, while we were there, he gave us a leaf that had a single drop of blood on it. He said he didn't know if it had anything to do with anything because there's a lot of wild hogs out
right
there. But he also gave me a tooth that he couldn't identify. Yeah, I couldn't identify it either. It wasn't one of mine, so anyhow, it was an odd-looking tooth. So we're going to send forward that on to Tom or you or whoever.
Yeah,
we
probably
need
to Tom send. To get it. See if we can't get it identified. Yeah.
All right. Well, we followed him way on out in the woods, and anyhow, actually when we got to the area, it was a smaller place than I was expecting from, you know, talking to him on the phone. But it looked like a good place for something to be if it wanted to kind of lay low. Even though I have to admit there was some car traffic, you know, not when I say car traffic, people just pulling off down there to the river, and you know, they never stayed very long. They never stayed very late, and well, I don't know, that might have been why. They may have been spooky. But anyhow, we looked it all over, and you know, he showed us the place where he saw the, well, both sightings.
Mm-hmm.
And it looked like a good place for, you know, I could hide there for a while.
Sure.
But anyhow, he had to get back to the house because he had to go to work. And I told him before he left, you know, that, you know, not to make it sound like we were suspicious of him or anything like that, but we told him that if any of his friends or anybody that he knew where we were, that he needed to go and tell the Monkey Suit Boys and the Ghillie Suit Boys that, you know, everybody enjoys a good joke, but, you know, it quits being a joke when 160 grain bullet goes into the chest cavity.
Sure.
Okay. I'm kind of, I see things a little bit different from Don. As far as leaving them alone, as soon as I get that first one, I'll leave the rest of them alone. But, you know, the best way to get the DNA is to load the body in the back of the truck and take it somewhere. Okay, that being said, he assured us that, you know, nobody was going to come around there doing anything ignorant, and we assured him that if they did, it would be, you know, it could possibly be a last time for him. But anyhow, afterwards, he went on to work, and me and Sweet got our camp set up and all that and got all ready for the night. And, you know, all went pretty well. And that night we heard all the, you know, the regular stuff, coyotes and owls and, you know, all kinds of the red hogs grunting. There's a lot of hogs out there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, about 10:30 at night, we heard some animal sounds that just weren't so usual.
Uh-huh.
And, yeah, we recognized them. They sounded a whole lot like some that we had heard up our way.
Mm-hmm.
And, we know what they weren't, you know, not positive what it was, but we just know that it wasn't anything that that you normally hear. It was the kind of vocalizations that we heard up in our area after we found the footprints.
Uh-huh.
We sat around and listened. We heard about six or seven over the next 45 minutes or so. And they started out low, real low and deep, and got louder and higher pitched, and it ended in kind of a whoop.
Right.
And anyhow, just not something that's that you hear every day.
I understand, yeah.
It wasn't that far off. Well, Swede, He was looking everything over with his night vision, and you know, we didn't see anything. We messed around there for about an hour. About 11:30, the Swede, he's standing down by the river. He called me over there and told me to look over in the bushes, pointed it out, looked over there, and there were eyes over there staring at us. Well, in the infrared, you know, we've seen deers, we've seen coyotes, we've seen cows and pigs and sheep and just everything through them. And, you know, everything through our infrared has green eyes. Well,
right.
these were kind of orange.
Uh-huh.
Well, we'd never seen anything like that before. And it just kind of... it was kind of disquieting, but it wasn't anything. I mean, we wasn't gonna send any bullets up that way because it was just eyes.
Right, I understand.
We watched it for about 5 minutes, and anyhow, I mean, through the infrared, I mean, they were shining like a diamond in the goat's butt. You couldn't help but see them.
Mm-hmm.
But anyhow, they it turned and went off into the brush, but the brush was so thick that you couldn't make out a form.
Right.
And so, you know, that's what we had to go with. We just saw eyes. Well, that's not uncommon in Arkansas. It's just the fact that just the color. That was the weird part.
I understand, yeah.
Yeah, so.
So it was a good trip.
Well, it was not as
successful as, of course, previous ones you've had, but at least you had something, yeah.
Well, Friday morning, about 1 o'clock, Swede, you know, he got in his sleeping bag and he got some rest, and I went and watched the bait. Saw a lot of the armadillos, and I guess one of the fattest coons I've ever seen. Is stealing our bait. Anyhow, Swede spelled me at 3 o'clock, and as I went to bed, and he sat there, you know, scoping everything out with the infrared, and the coon came back about 5:30. Then, you know, it was just, you know, up at 6 o'clock and beating and, you know, and trying to find tracks and trails. Well, there's a lot of tracks and trails, but they weren't what we were looking for. I mean, there's the hogs had worked it over really good.
Right.
We ate us some breakfast, and then we crossed the river and went to the approximate spot where we saw the eyes, and the ground was just nothing but rock, and you know, a few thousand years of leaves, and like I say, all we found was just where the hogs had rooted and all that. We spent all day Friday looking for something, but didn't have any luck. We set out some more bait everywhere. We put bait everywhere trying to get something going. Well, I guess it was about 5 o'clock. The Swede saw a flash white about 175 yards down the river from us. And the BC had mentioned to us that he had seen something white, and he thought that it was probably one of them. He feels as though there's a – he says that he thinks there's a pod of them.
Yeah.
Well, you know, can't argue. You know, we don't know, but, you know, the sweet
you know,
thing – yeah, he saw something white down the river. We went down and checked it out. Still couldn't find any sign. Well, we had some luck. The Swede, when we was walking off down there, he saw a cottontail and hit it in the head with a rock. So we took it back and cooked it up and ate it. But, yeah, that's good stuff. I don't care who you are. It got real cloudy that night. And, I mean, it was pitch black. Well, you know, we don't use any fires or, or liners in camp. We never have, because it makes us easy to see and makes everything hard to see outside the circle of light. But and it makes it, you know, the night vision useless. So anyhow, he was watching. Swede was on the night vision again. And we heard what sounded like tree knocks to the east of us, just, you know, two or three. But there wasn't anything else out there, anybody else out there. So he went out, and he looked all over for it, and all he saw was a wild hog. And if we'd been hog hunting, we didn't bring enough ammo. About 10, I was checking it out with the night vision, and, you know, the... And Orange Eyes was back, and in about the same area. Mm-hmm. And so as soon as I saw it, I spoke to the Swede, and I headed east, he headed west, and we was gonna cross the river above it and below it and try to work our way back and see if we could get something going in the middle there. Well, I made it about 6 foot out in the river, and it was cold river. And Swede, he was about halfway across, but like I say, I made about 6 feet across the river, and the eyes disappeared. And, you know, we had a plan, but I guess he had one too, and his worked better than ours did. So it took off, and I called Swede on the walkie-talkie and told him to forget about it. And so we headed back to camp, and we heard some more of the vocalizations. We heard one long one, and about 5 minutes later we heard four more short ones. There weren't any kind of bird calls or howls, nothing like that. And you know, then it kind of went dead. I went back to my blind at 1 o'clock in the morning and sat there until Swede came and got me. I heard a whole bunch of, heard the hogs fighting, but, you know. So the coon come and steal her bait again. Then, you know, Swede took over, and about 3:30 or 4 o'clock, he was sitting there, and he's had the night vision. He saw the orange eyes again, so he decided that, didn't say a word to me, didn't wake me up, didn't do nothing like that, nothing bright. He decided he's just going to go on over there. Well, it was dark. It was pitch black, and the creek bottom was pretty slick, so I knew something was going on when I heard the splash and the cuts, and he came up there, and he busted his butt out there in the creek, and he's soaking wet and mad. But, so he came up and changed clothes and took a nap. Well, BC showed up about an hour after that, and he just coming from work, so he took him a little nap while he was there. And so we were... me and Sweet, we went out and we stomped, back to trying to find a trail or a track, anything. And about 300 yards down the creek, a big old cypress tree, and I just caught a flash of movement down by it, and then it looked like something was kind of playing peekaboo with me. Around that cypress, I said something to the Swede, and I reached over there and got my binoculars. Well, when I looked back, there wasn't anything there. And so I was standing there talking to him, and he had the video camera out. He didn't have it turned on. He just, you know, using the lens. It's a 60 power.
Right.
Anyhow, he said that, you know, he saw a real quick flash of movement down there behind the cypress tree, too. So we walked off down there, and we found just a depression behind a little rise. Well, that's why we could only see the top part of, I mean, what when we looked it over, it was whatever it was, we figured it could have been about the Swede size, unless it was just us just thinking we saw something. But anyhow, something had been down there eating mussels. And there was a stack of shells there. I mean, they weren't fresh, but they were just piled up, and we don't know of anything that, you know, gathers up mussel shells and goes and sits down in the same place to eat them all the time.
Right.
And anyhow, everybody told us there's no bears in that area. So, you know, we ended up just kind of back in the same situation, scratching our heads. We went out, we looked for trails, we found what could have been 3 or 4 footprints leading up toward a bluff, where it was kind of slick and everything, but it was just the terrain wouldn't let us find any tracks. I mean, it just didn't work that way.
Sure.
But anyhow, we stayed after it. When BC got up, he had some bait, and we made him cross the river to put that bait up. We'd already got enough cold water for a while. But anyhow, it was just, we spent the whole day stomping around in the brush, spent all day Saturday stomping around the brush, climbing bluffs, just everywhere, looking for any place where it could, you know, den up or shelter up or anything like that. But we weren't finding anything. PC's wife and kids came out that night, and his buddy Tinker brought his family. They stayed a while, and, well, you know, we'd been running on 3 hours of sleep a night, so we'd kind of tired. And after everybody left, Swede and D.C. Decided to take a nap, and I thought about it, but I don't know. I just couldn't sleep, and, I hung out there and checked bait and, you know, watched across the river and all that. Well, BC woke up at about 1 o'clock in the morning. And Swede got up a little bit after that. And we were trying to decide what we wanted to do since everybody was up. And there was 3 of us, so we could cover more ground. And, I mean, it was dark, but it wasn't so dark that we ain't scared of the dark.
No, I understand. Rocky, hold on 1 second. Chris and Anthony, we're going to run overtime on the show. Don't worry about it. I got you next, okay? I just want Rocky to tell us the rest of this, and then each of you will be on here too, okay? Go ahead, Rocky. I didn't mean to interrupt.
That's all right. We were standing there trying to figure out what to do next, and, well, just out of nowhere, here comes a Chevy truck. Drove right through the middle of our camp, drove across the river, almost got stuck on a gravel bar, drove about a quarter of a mile down the creek, and then turned around and come back through. And so we figured, you know, that's probably, that was it for, probably for the, well, probably just it, period. And so we waited until it got dark. We went out one more time, and we went ahead and broke camp right then. But when it got daylight, we headed out, and we stomped it all out again, checked all the places that were mated. We used up 25 pounds of peanut butter and 10 cans of sardines.
Peanut butter's getting expensive now, Rocky.
Yeah, we were working it hard, though, but, you know, all we saw was, I guess it was, we were getting ready to go, And, you know, we were standing around talking, and I looked down to the east, and I saw a little white flash down there on the corner by the bend in the river, just like the Swede had. Well, when I said something about it, you know, BC said, well, I saw a, you know, he reminded us of the white thing that he had seen, so we went down there and checked it out, and there wasn't anything to be seen. But, you know, we was trying to figure out, you know, well, maybe it's the sun, you know, hitting the water and all that. But then up there at the camp where we were, you couldn't see the water there. It had to be something about at least 3.5 feet tall for it to even be seen above the bank. And so, well, you know, we checked it all out, walked it all out. We hollered over, said bye to the thing with orange eyes, and we loaded up and headed by. We took BC home and told him to get him some game cameras, put out there, keep baiting, keep in touch, and come right down to it. When it all was said and done, what we saw may have been something, may not have been something. When it was looking at us, it was something, but we didn't really find any kind of evidence. I've got a leaf with a drop of blood on it, a tooth, and there was plenty of food out there for something like that. So, you know, we didn't find anything that would, you know, that we could say, yeah, there is one out here. But at the same time, BC's convinced that there's something out there, and his buddy Tinker is convinced something is out there. They say they've seen them. And so just not long before I called you, I got a call from BC, but I wasn't able to take it. I'm going to call him in the morning and see what's up. But you know, we're still on it. We're still trying to do Tom proud.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to stay on top of things. You know, it's kind of one of those things. Like I say, I'm not like Don. I want to shoot the first one, and then I'll leave the rest of them alone after that. But I want the science people to have something to work with, and that way they'll stop laughing about at a bunch of us.
Well, Rocky, can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
You know, we have Chris on here all the time as well, and he lives in Arkansas. Can I give you Chris's number, and you can make contact with him? He'd like to talk to some of you guys out there and just to, you know, get information, maybe get together with you or plan something together or whatever.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah,
I'll give you a call in the morning or either after the show. I don't know, it's getting kind of late for you up there now, but I can give you a call after the show and give you his
fine.
Number. Okay.
Okay.
Well, Rocky, thank you so much for coming on. And, of course, you're going to keep in touch with us. You come on here every week, and we'll keep in touch with what's going on there. And
All right.
Thanks for coming on and sharing with us again. I appreciate that.
I'm here for you.
I know you are, and thank you so much for doing it.
All right. Tom, get better.
Okay. I'll tell him.
All right.
Take care, Rocky.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to go into overtime on this here because I got Anthony and I got Chris. Anthony, I'm going to take you next, and Chris, I'm going to take you last, if you mind. And we're just going to keep on going. Anthony, how are you, my friend?
Doing well, and sorry to hear that Tom is not feeling so hot. I hope he didn't visit his ex-wife, which is probably why he got food poisoning.
I guess when you eat oysters and shrimps and things like that. You got to be careful.
Tell us
what's going on. And remember, actually, a couple of weeks ago, had you on the show. What I'd like to do is have you go through, for everybody that doesn't know, there's some new people that are still online listening in here, Don and
Don and Mildred, yes.
Mildred, yeah. And what I'd like to share with everybody is this. Anthony, about, was it 2 years ago now?
Yeah, it's gone a little over 2 years.
Anthony gave me a call and sent me some pictures, and he had some tree formations that he'd seen that just absolutely phenomenal, and tree breaks and things like that. And he just knew that that couldn't have been done by, you know, one, by a human, and two, by a bear or anything, and they were just strange. So he sent those to us, came on the show, and got to be an avid researcher after being on the show. And Tom, about 8 months later, I think it was, wasn't it?
It was about a year later.
About a year later, we were doing an expedition, and Tom stopped by to see Anthony, and we did. And they went out, and of course, they showed Anthony how to bait and how to set an area up for footprints. And guess what? The creature, well, also, Anthony had a, prior to that, Anthony had a visual encounter. Two of them, actually, right?
That's correct.
Two visual encounters of this creature. And while Tom was there, they baited and set up the area for footprints. And guess what? The little old bugger ate the peanut butter, didn't he?
Yeah, but he ate the sardines but didn't like the peanut butter.
Yeah, he wiped the peanut butter off on the log.
That's right.
With his fingers, and he ate the sardines, and he left some footprints. And, of course, you have that as a memorabilia item for historical sake, and you became an avid big researcher out of that, right?
Yeah, that is correct.
And now, a couple of, this is about, what, a month ago? Or 3 weeks ago?
About three weeks ago.
Okay, tell us what happened.
Well, we were back at that same location. It was just a little further down the road.
Yeah, is this a substation, though?
Yeah, this is the electrical substation. This is where the rock throwing was taking place. Okay.
Right.
And when I went behind the substation to investigate, that's when I heard the whistling, you know?
Uh-huh.
It was a rainy day, and I stepped on a snapper of a twig really loud, and that's when I heard some whistling, and I thought that was the strangest thing. I'm like, you know, normally when you make a loud noise, you scare something away. You don't make them whistle. But I was going back to that particular area. I was going back behind the substation again, but I never made it behind the substation because I got, you know, halfway around the fence. And I heard a loud call, you know. I mean, it was like directly in front of me, you know. And and again, I'm not being offensive to our Native American brothers and sisters out there. It's just, you know, I'm just trying to describe how it sounded. I mean, it was just like you know, like something like that, you know, like right in front of me. And then there was a response behind me, and, you know, and I have the fence behind me, and I really thought I was going, you know, being attacked or something. And,
you were surrounded.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I had nowhere to go. I had nowhere to go, so, and I certainly wasn't going to run into, you know, into the woods where the whistling and the rocks were coming from. So, I mean, I did go back to my vehicle, but at the same time, you know, I realized, okay, yeah, I wasn't being attacked or anything, but there was, I wasn't going to go any further than that. I really didn't want to go back there because, I could visibly see some of the pictures that I sent you, and we talked about this before on other shows, that, you know, that TP-like formation of those huge, logs that were just put there was now blocked by this huge oak tree that was just, you know, it was basically put there because I was looking at previous pictures and that tree wasn't there before, so I don't know how it even got there, but I could see that it was kind of like put there, you know, just to block that path for anybody to get by there, and And so that's what I was trying to see, you know, to see if, you know, if they, you know, I was going to try to, you know, get in there and see if there was anything else that was different, you know. But I got to tell you, man, that was a pretty loud scream. And the interesting thing was, I mean, it didn't sound like they were that far in front of you, but I couldn't see. I couldn't see from where they were. So it was pretty interesting. And I know that there's only two families that live off of that right-of-way, and you know, they're nowhere near that substation. So, I mean, you know, as far as yelling living near that close to the substation. So I know it wasn't a person, you know. When I got back in my truck, I stood around for a little while just to see if I could see any movement. And these buggers, man, they know how to hide, you know.
Yeah.
They know how to... I'm sorry, you think?
Yeah, man, I'll tell you, yeah.
So, did set up some game cameras. Unfortunately, I didn't have the time this weekend to go out there and retrieve any pictures, but I do plan to be out there this weekend to retrieve some photos, and hopefully, you know, something, you know, probably cross the path, and I will see, you know, if something did, you know, I'll definitely let you know. But
sure.
But
yeah, give me a call.
Yeah, and Don and Mildred, got your email address, so you get in touch with me. I'm sharing some of the details there, so if you like to give me a call or email, whatever, you know, I'd like to hear from him. I'm guessing he's close to my border there, so.
Sure. Well, what we can do is, if you want, I can send him an email with your contact information if you like that.
Sure.
Okay. And I'll do that. Okay. Well, heck, thanks, Anthony, for coming on tonight and taking us through it. I got one more guest, Chris from Arkansas. And I'll keep in touch with you, Anthony. Thanks a lot for coming on.
Thanks for having us.
And good luck this weekend.
Thank you. All right, you have a good night.
Yeah, take care.
All right, you too. Bye now.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was Anthony from Virginia. Next, we're going to go to Chris from Arkansas. Chris, how are you, my friend?
I'm pretty good, Marco. How are you, brother?
I'm doing great. Well, Chris, why don't you give us a little rundown on what's going on in your part of the woods there?
Well, I had a really nice experience the other day. I went out to the woods and had my girl with me, and it was morning time. And the back side of the pipeline where the original encounter, where everywhere I've been pretty much, spend the most time, that's the place where I spend the most time. And the reason is because that's the place where I found it's that big of stretch of woods. It's not really that much area to cover, but there's a lot of clear cuts. I mean, it's a nice-sized woodland area, but it's not massive. It's not unthinkable that you think you might be able to get out there and miss something. Like, I don't feel like I'm never going to get to see it again. I feel like I have a pretty good chance that's around where it stays in that area. So I went to the marsh at the bottom of the pipeline, and I was just standing there by the creek that runs through the marsh, and I was just listening. And I started walking towards the left side of the creek just so I could see over the bushes and see, like, back down into the marsh, because the bushes in the marsh, whatever plants those are that grow in that marsh down there, it's not cattails, but they get pretty tall. And it's wintertime, they're starting to die, but they're still pretty tall. So I had to, like, get over to the side, and I was looking up, and when I got over there, I heard some splashing going on in the marsh. And immediately I went to where I could look to see if I could see some deer running through, or there's even hogs down there. And I didn't see anything running through at all. Like, I figured it would be crossing my path this way or coming around through the woods where I could see it or keep hearing it. Because, I mean, if it was a deer, if it was going, if it ran through the water, it would still be running when it hit the leaves and all those limbs, and it would make noise. And when I didn't hear a bunch of crunching after the water, I decided I was going to start making my way over there. Now, the underbrush right there was real, it's real thick, and there's vines and with thorns. And so I'm trying to be as quiet as possible, but also as quickly as possible get over there. I get over there on the side of the creek on the other side, and I'm looking, and I can't see, like, around the bend still. So I went on ahead and crossed the creek. There was a log there. So I got to the other side, the little in the bend, the other side of the creek, and now I'm right where I ought to be able to see anything that's over there, if there's anything over there. And when I got over there, I still didn't see anything. Now, whatever it was that ran through the water, after I got over there and I really saw just how far away I was when that happened, one of the main things that caught my attention was that the water, I noticed the water moving. Like, after I heard the splashing, like, when it came around the bend, I seen the water come. So, I mean, whatever went through there made a pretty good amount of ripples for me to see it at the bend where I was looking at the creek. And I even went as far this time as climbing a tree and sitting up in a tree and waiting to see if I could see something come out. And I got a real good view of the marsh. I sat there for a little bit, but I didn't see anything. My girl was on the other side. She was just real close to the marsh, just sitting there listening and watching. I did a couple calls while I was sitting up in the tree. I figured I'd get a good bit of distance with the vocalization that I was doing. Without wanting to stay out there really long, I sat up there for a little bit. I didn't get an answer back. I was kind of disappointed about that. It doesn't happen very often that I don't get some kind of noise or something when I'm out there, a tree knock or something. But I want to say that I feel like with the way that water moved and the fact that I didn't see any deer running through at all and I didn't hear the continue of leaves crunching after I seen the water move, that I do believe that I was right there up close to one again and didn't get to see it. I'm dying to get a daytime encounter so I can see some kind of facial features. If it's not running from me, it's killing me to. I've only, you know, like really seen it at night, but not seen anything but just a figure in a flashlight with eye shine. I did find foot impressions in the leaves. This isn't new to me though. It's something that people that come out there, they see it with me, they'll call it out. I'll let them see one and say something. I might have already seen two or three, but I know that I could call one out if they never did see one. But I tell them to look for them, and so I'll wait for there to be one deep enough for the impression to stand out good enough in the leaves and in the little twigs and stuff that's on the ground for them to be like, it looks like somebody stepped there. And I'm like, yeah, but look, you can kind of see the toes. I mean, it's the one in the dirt, the first one I sent you the pictures of, that's the only one that I've got. This, like, you can see, like, toes heel besides, like, the older one. I also sent you a picture of that one. It's real old. It's an old print. It wasn't fresh, and it was dried up in the mud, and some of the ground around it had crumbled, but you could still tell that it was a print. So the hunt around here, it's still going good. I'm kind of upset that you've been holding out on me. This guy named Rocky that'll come to South Arkansas. I mean,
yeah. Well, I'm gonna call after the show and give me your number, so he's gonna give you a call.
Yeah, I'm glad you're gonna do that. Where I'm in Union County, Arkansas. What county was this in that they were in?
I don't know the county. I'll have Rocky give you a call after the show.
Okay, because, I mean, the peanut butter and the sardines, I mean, that's right on the money. I mean, a lot of the stuff that he was talking about.
Well, that's what we do, Chris. I mean, all of us, peanut butter and sardines has been a good bait for quite a long time. We've also used some of the wild fruit stuff, apples and things like that, but they didn't go for the apples that much, or bananas and things like that. But peanut butter and sardines seems to be something that they like.
Yeah, I was just pointing out the noises that they said they made, the unexplainable noises they know that no animal around that region was making.
Yep.
The popping up and the visiting and the fact that I've seen two different size foot impressions for sure. There's a big one that just about every time we measured, it measures around the same length, and that's somewhere in between 17 and 17 and a half inches. I don't know if it depends on how he's stepping down on his foot or she or whatever, but it's 17 and a half inches from heel to big toe. And then there's a smaller one that would probably only be this 9.5 inches to 10 inches. So, I mean, I'm not sure how large the creature would have to be to make a 9.5. But when Jim Dawson and them came, when he left, he told me that he didn't think that I only had one, that he thought I had a family unit as well.
Normally, we don't know, but most of the time, these creatures usually don't, I mean, they're not solitary creatures, usually. They usually, you wouldn't want to be out there all by yourself all the time, right? I mean, they're not like mountain lions and stuff where they, you know, after they mate, they separate and eat their young. They're family pods. I mean, they actually gather together just, you know, like a family. I mean, they have a social type of a function. And so I think most of these, and I don't know, but I say I think, just based on lots of information that we've gotten previously in other areas, and where we've seen or had encounters of more than one, these creatures seem to hang around in family pods, you know. And so that's where we, you know, kind of come up with that. And I think it would be a common thing. I mean, like I said, we can't validate that for sure because we don't know. But it's just a theory, just based on information and other things that we've had from previous times. From other people.
Well, I understand all that completely.
Well, I appreciate you coming on tonight here, Chris, and I want to, of course, here we are at the end of another show. Well, we all went overtime tonight, and the reason I did that is I wanted to make sure that everybody had a chance to tell their story. It makes it kind of difficult if I cut you off and say, okay, come back next week and do it. You lose your train of thought. So I wanted to make sure that everybody got their, you know, all the information that they had to talk about out. And we had some wonderful guests tonight. I want to appreciate all of you for coming on and sharing your stories with us. And I'd like, on behalf of Tom, tell everybody Merry Christmas. And we'll see everybody next week. Keep Bigfooting and keep researching. Good night, everyone.
Well, folks, once again, it's time to say so long. We'd like to thank Mr. Tom Biscardi and his guests and the Bigfoot team for joining us, and we'd especially like to thank you, our listeners, for tuning in. This is Marco Bill saying see you next Wednesday evening for some more Bigfoot Live radio show entertainment with Mr. Tom Biscardi and his team. And until then, keep the Bigfoot live and keep Bigfooting. See you next week.
Three men with a gold and a pack that they'd hold and a promise till the day that they died. Answers to the questions no one's found before. Driving determination, the only key they had to unlock the door. Monsters, myths, and mysteries, legends, tales, and facts. We're all together.